and welcome to a special edition of the Legal Geeks today. In addition to my partner in geekdom, Josh Gilliland, we actually have a special guest with us today, Josh's brother, Gabriel Diani, a filmmaker extraordinaire who will soon be all over TMZ, I'm sure. Hopefully only for good gossip. We are here today to discuss the movie that he wrote, produced, and starred in called The Selling. It involves a haunted house and trying to sell that house. And I have to ask you, Gabriel, what inspired you to write this movie?
Well, the director, Emily Liu, called me up. This is going on about 6.5 years now. And she said, I want to direct a movie. I want you to write and star in it. And I said, okay, great. No one else was interested in me for anything, so it sounded good. She had access to an empty house in Northern California to shoot in, and so we were brainstorming ideas of what we could shoot there, and I thought, well, empty house, real estate, I love ghost stories, no one's done, surprised that no one had really done a real estate agent trying to sell a haunted house before, and I was just always a big fan of ghost stories and great, those old great scare comedies of Abbott and Costello, I think that comedy and horror are a great mixture, and so that's what we decided to do.
Cool. Now, did you conduct any legal research to find out what kind of obligations or duties a real estate agent does have when selling a haunted house?
None at all. I don't believe that filmmakers should do any research at all. No, I did do a little research, and I talked to some real estate agents, and I did a Google search, and I wish the Legal Geeks were around then. I could have just asked you guys. I did find out that it was, and maybe Josh can clarify, because it's been over 3 years since I've done the research, but I know that it's illegal in California, at least, to sell a house without saying that it's believed to be haunted or that, you know, that it's haunted. I don't know if it's the entire United States. I don't remember. So I did a little bit of research and put it into the movie.
All right, that's impressive. Now, has your movie won any awards?
Yes, it's won all of them, everywhere. We've been very lucky. We won the audience award and the jury award at the Friars Club Comedy Film Festival, and got to go to the Friars Club to pick up the award, which is very exciting. Jerry Lewis has been in those hallowed halls. And every other comedian that you probably know of. We won at the audience award at the Tallgrass Film Festival in Kansas. We won Idlewild. We won Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Actor at the LA Comedy Awards. We won Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Actor, Best Ensemble, Best of the Fest, and Best Director. And so we've done very well. And we picked up a couple more, but there's so many I can't keep track of them all.
Well, I have to say, as the only objective person here, that I watched the film and I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I was especially excited as a Buffy fan to see a few Buffy, can't even say cameos. There was one cameo, obviously, by the great Mayor Wilkins, the big bad of Sunnydale. So that was exciting.
Harry Groner.
That's right. He was fantastic. And also, obviously, the woman who played your mom in the movie, she was only one episode of Buffy, but she played Joyce's friend, and I've always remembered her from that role. So speaking of Buffy and the fictional Sunnydale, I know you guys are actually from Sunnyvale. Did you guys have any ghostly or demonic experiences yourself growing up in Sunnyvale?
Yes, we did. Josh might actually want to take this one. Josh?
Well, as part of Sunnyvale pop culture and history, being the icon that we are for that, we do have the haunted Toys R Us. And as legend tells of the kid who died in the cherry orchard, that's one version of the story. They built a Toys R Us over where, you know, he died years later, and his spirits haunt the halls of the Toys R Us. We were there with our youngest brother, Jordan, and we were in elementary school, and Jordan was, you know, in the rocking horse section where they had the little cars and the rocking horses, and we're there with two other buddies. And all of a sudden, one of the rocking horses leans to the right, like someone's getting on it, and starts rocking. This concerns all of us, and there is literally like the Jerry Lewis, Don Knotts reaction from all of us. as we all want to flee, and you know, our youngest brother wants to ride one of the pedal cars. So, you know, it was so that was one of the big ones in Sunnyvale.
Oh my.
Yeah. Good times, good memories. So.
It's been on TV, so it has to be true.
Well,
yeah, obviously.
And art does imitate life a lot. And speaking of which, I understand that there were actually some kind of real-life experiences, I guess, that you, recreate in the movie. Can you tell us about those?
Let's see, some real-life experiences. Well, when we were growing up, we believed that our grandfather's house was haunted. Yeah, it would sort of make noises on a schedule every night at 2 a.m. It would start in the den, which used to be the master bedroom, and it'll go into the down the hall and into the kitchen, down the hall next to the room that we were sleeping in, and so that was a lot of fun.
Oh my! Is there anything else from real life that you actually replicated in the movie?
Yeah, well. About the time that that the director called me to do this project, I got a call from my mom, and she to tell me that she was sick, and that she had cancer. And so these parallel stories were going on. I was working on this story, and this real life story was unfolding. And I needed a reason why my character would try to sell this stigmatized property to unsuspecting people, and for the audience not to hate him. And I was really frustrated at the time because my mother's bills, medical bills, the claim had been denied by the insurance company. It was very frustrating, and so I decided to put it into the script that my character was trying to sell his haunted house in order to pay for his mother's medical bills. And I, you know, basically took a lot of conversations verbatim, or versions of conversations that I had with my mom. So it's very personal in that way. She's the heart and soul of the movie. And, you know, it was meant to be in, you know, an homage that my mother would be able to see and be able to see herself represented on screen. It sadly didn't work out that way, but the film is dedicated to her, and, you know, I think she would have liked it. She loved a good ghost story, and she loved to laugh, so.
Well, that's very sweet. I'm very sorry, obviously, for both of you personally. That was very hard, but I think that's a very sweet homage to your mom, and I loved your mom in the movie. I'm sure your real-life mother was even more amazing. So I'm sorry, but that is very nice that you're honoring her with this film. And can I ask, how are you getting this film out there? What are you doing to get it distributed? I know that's always a challenge.
It is. It's really hard if you don't premiere at Sundance and have all the Sundance buzz and get picked up by Fox Searchlight or Lionsgate or something like that. So for the other 5,000 to 10,000 independent films that are made every year, it's really hard to find an audience. So we were lucky enough to find a digital distributor called Go Digital, who's going to be, serving as a middleman to get it onto platforms that people recognize, like iTunes, Amazon, etc. And we have a DVD company called Grant Entertainment that's going to be releasing a DVD in October as well. If you're just directed DVD or directed VOD, it's hard to get as good a placement as if you're a theatrical film. So if we can raise some money to have some theatrical screenings, then we can get better placement for our trailer on iTunes, and it'll help people to find the movie in the sea of all these, you know, movies that you know, you're flipping through on iTunes to see what's available or whatever. excuse me, we're raising funds on a website called Kickstarter to have a theatrical release, and people can pre-order their tickets for our San Francisco show on October 20th, our Chico, California show. One of our co-producers and co-stars is from Chico, on August 25th. And then we're having an LA show that'll be in October that we're still trying to finalize the date and the venue for. People can buy tickets for that. They can also pre-order a digital version of the movie for their phone, their laptop, or their TV. They can pre-order a DVD, posters. They can get the band that appears in the movie to come and play at their event. There's lots of really great incentives that people can use.
Do they do this all through Kickstarter, or are there other ways to keep track of what's going on with the selling?
They can also look us up on Facebook. They can like us at facebook.com/theselling, or they can follow us on Twitter @theselling. And those are great ways to keep in touch and find out what's going on with the film, when it's going to be coming out, and all that great stuff.
Well, cool. Well, I hope it does really well. I'm very excited. I will certainly, if you ever have a Wisconsin showing, I will be there.
Oh, great. Our book was printed in Wisconsin.
Oh, well, look at that. It's a Wisconsin connection.
You know, first Kickstarter project, you mentioned the book. What was the book that you had published?
The book, how do I explain this quickly? Okay, the book, someone last year was taking Mark Twain's Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, and they were they changed the N-word to slave in order to try to stop it from being censored in schools and stuff. And we thought that censoring something in order to stop it from being censored didn't really quite work. So we did a satire where we made this video where we were raising funds to replace the N-word with robot and create the robotic edition of Huckleberry Finn. And we did it as a joke, and we ended up, we made our original goal in 24 hours and ended up making 30 grand in order to make this book. So then we actually had to do it. So we made this really nice, beautiful hardback book. We took all the original illustrations from the original edition, and my writing partner and someday wife, Edith Devine, her mother is an illustrator, and so she took the original illustrations, took anyone of color out, and put a robot in its place. And it's a beautiful book, and we're really proud of it.
Wow, very cool.
Thanks. It's available on Amazon
and
on our website,
theaniedivine.com. Check that out.
It's nice to actually see someone standing up for the First Amendment and historical accuracy. So it's well done.
And humor.
Exactly.
Josh, go ahead.
And you know, living up to Mark Twain's view of irony. So I think Mark Twain would be very proud of that as well, to help make the point of being an anti-bigotry book, because that's the beauty of Huck Finn. And so, well done.
Thank
Plus,
you.
Mark Twain loved robots.
He did. I think he would love robots. Most of the guff that we got from people was from Twain supporters. It was like, how dare you change this book? It's like, it's irony. It's what Twain was doing in the book.
Well, speaking of humor, let me ask Josh some legal questions now, because those are always very
fun. Yeah,
that's right. Lawyers.
I'll go get a drink.
So Josh, tell me.
Yeah.
Josh, tell me, what case law is there out there on dealing with haunted houses?
Well, you know, it's tough to get an expert who you can, you know, certify in court under Federal Rule of Evidence, you know, 702, or the state law, you know, equivalence, being able to go, yes, I'm an expert in the paranormal, because it's very hard to prove beyond either preponderance of the evidence in a civil case or beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal case that there is an afterlife, that there are ghosts, and, you know, judges really aren't cool with the idea of seances in court that makes them uncomfortable. It's tough to swear in a dead person. And so that there are problems with that. But there is a small body of case law dealing with ghost law. And one, you know, has haunted me since law school. And that's Sombrowski v. Ackley from New York in 1991. And it's a great little property case, because the sellers had a house that they had ghostly encounters in. They had it on TV shows. They were part of the local walking tour to see spooky things. And so they capitalized on the fact that they were terrorized by poltergeists. Well, they didn't tell that to the person who bought it. And the case isn't clear if they had, you know, cats flying through the house and the walls bleeding and that sort of thing, or they bought it and then, you know, there's a walking tour coming by going like, oh yeah, this place is where, you know, X happened and there are all these horrible ghosts living there, which probably upset their sense of zen. And the first thing people do when they're upset is call an attorney. So lawyers were called, case was filed to rescind the contract on, you know, kind of you didn't disclose the fact that the place is haunted. And they lost at the trial level on the doctrine of caveat emptor. You know, like buyer beware. And the buyer then won on the appellate level, because, you know, the court took issue, and the court had fun working in all little, you know, ghost humor throughout the opinion, but you really can't have a situation where somebody's capitalized and made a profit on being a haunted house and then not disclose that to the unknown buyer. And then when they buy the house and, you know, bad things start happening, or, you know, they find out that they're part of a tour, they're listed in books, you know, the court took the position that, you know, you call the, you know, like the exterminator to check for rodents, you have somebody check the foundation. You generally don't call someone to have a seance. You don't have, you know, the old priest and the young priest accompany you on the site inspection to make sure everything's okay. You know, disclosures do not include, by the power of Christ, I compel you. It's just, we don't have that. I mean, if there's a picture of Linda Blair in the place, maybe that should be warning that you might need one. But those are the issues to watch out for. And, you know, so it's a huge disclosure requirement. That's probably the one big one, and I spent some time researching it because that's what I do. I mean, there's a fun little case from Hawaii from 1914, so this is before Hawaii was even a state, in which the seller claimed she was induced into selling the house to her brother-in-law about, you know, that the house was haunted, claiming that the brother-in-law told her the house was haunted and that's what was keeping her ill. The court rejected that, saying, like, that sounds just a little too convenient. We don't believe you. The brother-in-law seems far more credible, as does everybody else. And there were huge witness, you know, issues in examining, you know, the seller. So, again, those are kind of the trends that we can see from a total of two cases spanning 1914 to 1991, if we can call that any sort of trend or kind of loosely a body of law. But the issue is it's disclosure. And if you have, again, you know, if there was like some horrible, you know, 20-person murder at a place, you kind of need to disclose that. So, again, it's what you watch out for. So, but, yes, that's my not being a, you know, attorney who focuses on real property and only being haunted since law school about one case. That's what I found.
All right, well, look at that. We had some fun. We talked movies and we learned something. I hope everyone else has enjoyed this special edition of The Legal Geeks as much as I have. Gabriel, I have to make a movie pitch to you. If you ever want to make a movie about Legal Geeks, I think you've got your lead actor and actress right here. So
Let's do it.
Make yeah. me your next movie.
It's a great title. It's a great title.
Tell me again where we can find out about your movie.
TheSellingTheMovie.com, Facebook.com/TheSelling, at TheSelling on Twitter, or if you want to check out our funny videos on the Kickstarter page, it's Kickstarter.com, and then just type in TheSelling into the search bar, it'll come up. Well, Vincent Price is our pitchman for our video, and Barry Bostwick is a funny video as well. So it's even if you don't have money to give, it helps to share the videos around, and you can give and support in that way.
Excellent. Well, good luck with it. I think it was a fantastic movie. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope everybody has a wonderful non-haunted day out there.
Thanks very much.
Awesome. Well, so in our episode dedicated to nepotism, I'd like to sign off. Thank my brother. Thank Jessica. And we'll see everyone very soon. Have a wonderful
you didn't
day.
You didn't have any special questions, Josh?
Well, you know, I do, and well, in the interest of time, I will ask one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, Gabe, I've always been impressed with your knowledge of movies, and in a recent podcast you did, you know, you were questioned kind of extensively about different films from the 80s and action sequences and quotes, and since we are attorneys, I thought let's throw some questions to you about lawyer movies. And
ooh,
so,
okay.
Let's see. So let's see if you can name a film. And it's okay because if you're not a lawyer, I understand. But you did have a lost childhood in front of a TV set. So, name the lawyer movie. You come in here with a skull full of mush, and you leave thinking like a lawyer. What film was that? And it's one that every attorney sees, and they usually see it their first week of law school.
You come here with a skull.
I've never seen it. If that helps, Gabriel.
I did, and it depressed me.
It
I think I know
like,
what it is, but I never
it
saw
it. Sounds like Top Gun for lawyers. you kind of like, for lawyers, you think of like a lawyer. The Firm?
No. It's actually The Paper Chase with Professor Kingsfield. And so, classic, you know, attorney movie that every law student sees.
All right.
So, next question. So it's a classic, and I'm pretty sure you'll get this one. So, now this should scream out, you know, what it is, since you know you were the English major as well. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal. I'm no idealist to believe firmly in the integrity of the courts and our jury system. That's no ideal to me. That is a living, working reality. Now, I am confident that you gentlemen will review without passion the evidence that you have heard, come to a decision, and restore this man to his family. In the name of God, do your duty. In the name of God, believe Tom Robinson.
I've
read the book.
Have I read the book? Is that with Atticus Finch?
Yes.
I'm blanking on the name of the movie now. Atticus Finch. It's Gregory Peck, and it's a classic movie that I've sadly never seen. And it's called. It's not A Time to Kill. That's the ripoff of it. To Kill a Mockingbird.
So, well done. So, one for one. And finally, something that's not at all topical today. Can't you understand that you take a law like evolution and you make it a crime to teach it in public schools? Tomorrow you can make it a crime to teach it in the private schools. And tomorrow you make it a crime to read about it. And soon you may ban books and newspapers. And then you turn Catholic against Protestant, Protestant against Protestant, and you try to foist your own religion upon the mind of men. If you can do one, you can do the other. Because fanaticism and ignorance is forever busy and needs feeding. And soon, Your Honor, with banners flying and with drums beating, we'll be marching backwards, backwards through the glorious ages of the 16th century when bigots burned the man who dared bring enlightenment and intelligence to the human mind.
Inherit the Wind?
Yes. Well done. Well done.
Yay. Thank you. I'm surprised there wasn't a... We live in a world with walls. Who's going to guard those walls?
That's what I was waiting for.
It's too easy.
It would have been
easy.
Pretty easy. It would have been pretty easy.
But, you know, I mean, it's not like anything relevant to the Scopes trial has happened recently. So, you know,
no,
it's...
No, not at all. It's not relevant.
Yeah, that sort of thing is confined to the 1920s. So it's nothing to worry about.
Good.
Well, look
good.
At this. It is just like law school, Gabriel, where you've been put on the spot. Pop quiz. You did well. So
you did very well.
56%. I think that's a passing grade.
Okay, good.
You know, as
I'm
Meatloaf
taking this
said,
class pass-fail anyway, so it's okay.
Well, you know, as Meatloaf said, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And since it is the 35th anniversary of Bat Out of Hell, it's a good way to end. So thank you, little brother, and thank you, Jessica. And
thank you, Josh, for the pop quiz. I did not know that was coming. That was entertaining.
That's the idea. So see everyone very soon and have a wonderful day.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.